Greetings, this is Nigeria Anderson, and you're with UrbanBuzzMag.com. And I have composer, writer, songwriter. I mean, you do so much, Jason, but I'm going to let you do it. Jason, we have Jason Nesmith on the line with us. And I mean, you're like a creative genius, going you, but he's part of the Stranger Things Tales from 85 Netflix animated project and scored some of the music, right, Jason?
Well, so yes, thank you, Nigeria, for having me here and having me on. I really appreciate that, and thank you so much for those kind words. It's really nice to hear you say that. I appreciate that very much.
You are welcome.
And yes, to be specific, I've written the theme music for the new Stranger Things Tales from 85. It's the opening music that will open the show, and, you know, it's the music that kind of sets the tone for the show.
Right.
You know, it's a new animated adventure series on Netflix, and we're all very excited about it. There is another composer that's doing the actual scoring in the show. That is not me. I just did the opening theme music, but yes, it's been a wonderful journey, and we're very, very happy with how it's come out, and it's about to be launched in just like a week or so here, a couple weeks on April 23rd. It'll be available to view on Netflix.
Man, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
So how do you know how to get the pulse of a scene in a movie? How do you get to that place where what I'm about to play is good for this opening or this theme?
That's a very interesting question. I started years ago, maybe 20 years ago, and I wrote my first theme for a show that was briefly on TV. It was on for about 3 years. And it sort of started me down this journey of theme music. And theme music is a very specific approach because, you know, you're trying to sort of sonically brand a show.
Right.
You're trying to fit into a very short piece of music, kind of, what the show is about, what you're about to see, what it's going to sound like, what it's going to feel like. And so there's a lot of expectation on the theme music. So to your question of how do you sit down and do that, what I have found over the years to be very, very helpful is to get as close as you can with the people that are creating the show,
okay,
either the director, the producer, or, you know, whoever is sort of steering the ship. In the case of Stranger Things in this new animated adventure series, it was Eric Robles and Matt and Ross Duffer who, you know, were creating the show. So what I did was try to really speak with them and really get a sense of what they wanted, what they were going for. And, you know, as a media composer, one of your jobs is to listen to the things they say and then try to interpret that into kind of a musical direction.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of, you know, you talk, you have long conversations about the show, about what they're kind of thinking and hearing, what they're trying to achieve. And then what I do is I sit down at the piano and I start trying to play something that I feel is inspired by the conversation I've had with them about the show. So it's really like, it's important to me. I like to try and start writing as quickly as I can after speaking with them, you know, to kind of really like get a sense of usually what comes out of me pretty quickly from there is quite often in the neighborhood of what ends up working.
Right.
Because it sort of kind of encapsulates what you've been talking about. And I seem to be able to express myself that way musically. Like when I spoke to them specifically about this, after I spoke to them, I was able to kind of sit down and start playing some things that really seemed to, you know, reflect what we've been talking about.
Right.
So it's different for every project. Some projects you get to get close, some projects you don't. You're reading off an email or a music brief. That makes it a little harder because you're not, it's not personal. With this project, it was very personal. Eric and I spent a lot of time on the phone,
mm-hmm,
and in Zoom talking. So I find that to be a very crucial driving force in trying to create a piece of music that's going to, you know, brand a show like Stranger Things.
Yeah. No, I like what you said. A piece of music, like literally, because a theme song or a commercial, those are like 30 seconds, right. You know, right. Yeah. So you made it sound good because you've been doing this for years and years. So you in a place now that you could kind of, oh yeah, yeah, that'll work. But
yeah,
go back to when you first started. Okay. How did you begin your journey? You know, did you have these cassettes and was like, hey, check this out. Like, how did your entry into being a media composer start?
Well, yeah, that's. I'm glad you specified media composer because I worked as a touring musician in a band for most of my 20s, and that was a very different approach to music, a very different experience. It was a wonderful experience, but you know, I had been interested in the composition part of music since I was very young. That was always what was kind of the most fascinating part and what really connected me to music.
Uh-huh.
I loved playing guitar and I loved playing piano and stuff, but I was just fascinated by the construction of it, by going from nothing to something and mm-hmm. then building on it and then having something. Like it, that part of the journey was always very special to me. So right around the age of 30, I switched back into composing, and I met, you know, some other composers that ended up becoming, you know, kind of mentors for me, because composing for media is a very specific type of approach to music, and it's very different than songwriting or writing concert music, or because you're kind of going back to that collaborating with the directors and producers, you're working with other people as a team to bring something together. You know, I can sit here and write music by myself all day long,
right?
And I have it and I like it and I can play it for people and that's great, but as a media composer, you're really, it's a very collaborative thing, and it's important that sort of at the forefront. One of the first things I wrote was some music for a show called Extra, which is an entertainment news magazine. And I'll never forget, because I got to speak to the music supervisor, a guy named Marcus Johnson, who was really nice. And he brought me into his office and he kind of explained to me that if I was going to sort of, you know, go down this road of music for television, that I needed to kind of expand my horizons as far as my writing ability and be able to write in many different genres.
Mm.
And that was a very, very helpful early on in my career because it set me off on a path of exploration. You know, I had been writing in, you know, pop and rock and,
right,
you know, that those kinds of things. But when I had sort of decided I wanted to start composing in this arena, you know, it really was important that I kind of widen my palette. And so right, that was one of the first things I did in attempting to write for TV and film, and I think it was one of the best things I did because it has really served me well over the years.
That's excellent. When you began, how did you handle some of the rejection to keep trying? Or did you have a contact in the industry and they just was like, oh, this is my friend. Yeah, he does this and check this out.
Well, so, you know, that's also very interesting. I started off as a child. I was actually a child actor, and I did some commercials. And I was raised in Hollywood and in Laurel Canyon, and I was kind of around the industry.
Uh-huh.
And as a child, as a young kid going up for auditions, you don't get most of what you go up for.
Right.
You know, you go on 30 auditions, and you're lucky if you get one. At least that was my story. And right, I got a couple things here and there, nothing big, but like little commercials and stuff. But it taught me at a very young age that rejection was a huge part of it, and that sometimes maybe you weren't good enough, but that most of the time it was because you just didn't have the right color eyes or the right color hair or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was out of your control, and they just were looking for something different. You weren't tall enough, you were too tall, whatever it was, right? So that I learned at a very young age to not take the rejection too personal and also be ready for the rejection.
Mm-hmm.
And I carried that through. And I still to this day, you know, most of the things, I don't know if this is if I should say this, but a lot of the things I go for, I don't get. And then I get some of the things. And I never really know why I don't get what I don't get.
Right.
I do know why I get what I get. But, you know, it is a huge part of it. And, you know, I think you have to have a thick skin. You have to be ready to be rejected and told no a million times. And, if I don't know what else I would do if I wasn't composing music, it's something that I love and cherish so much that I just don't know what I would do. So even when I'm rejected, I still go back to the piano and just keep writing because right. it's what I love to do. I've been fortunate to have been able to make a living at it
yeah.
for a while now, and I'm very grateful for that. But I think even if I wasn't, and I've had to ask myself this question sometimes, I think even if I wasn't, I just would do it anyway. I can't see a life where I didn't do it. So there's that. And then as far as the part about connections and stuff like that, there is no question that relationships are important. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's always been important to me that if somebody gives me a chance to work on a project with them, that I literally want to bring 1,000% to it.
And right.
I don't care if it's a huge project. I don't care if it's someone, if it's a smaller project or if it's whatever it is. If I'm involved in it and we have a connection on it, I'm going to bring everything I possibly can to it, because those are the types of relationships that you build over the years that, you know, if people can count on you and people know that you're giving it their all, then they're going to come back to you and they're going to keep using you. And that's proven true in my past.
Right.
I've worked on a lot of shows with people that I continue to work with. And I think the dedication is being, you know, like I said, bringing your all to it, but it's also about being kind to people. And
yes.
It's about being respectful to people. And, you know, that all is all also very important, because we're all just trying to do our best here. And
you so better say
like,
it.
You know, you know what I mean?
Especially in entertainment. We all trying to do our best.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, you know, relationships are important. And if you make them, respect them and honor them and cherish them and work hard for them, because it's really how this whole thing works. People like to work with people they like.
Right.
And, you know, also that also do a good job. So it's all part of it. It's really,
right.
you know, it's all part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you said you played a piano. Do you play any other instruments?
So my main instrument is guitar and piano.
Okay.
Those are the two that I play the most. Of course, I play bass, I play a little drums, I play some percussion.
Right.
But really, you know, my main instrument these days is piano, because I just find that I write the best on
yeah.
piano. It's what I feel the most connected to. But, you know, I'm not much of an instrumentalist these days. I really focus on the composition side of things. And, you know, a lot of times I'm having to bring in real players
right.
because I can't even write. I can't even play half the stuff I write. You know what I mean? So I like to lean on the guys that are very, you know, like the virtuosos and the guys who really do it well, because nothing brings a piece of music alive than when you get just a fantastic player on it. It just elevates it to another level. So that's important to me.
Yeah, I mean, you work with a lot of orchestras, ensembles. I mean, I saw you worked with an ensemble, a 32-piece band. Like, how do you even write score 32-piece? Tell us about that.
Well, at a very young age, my mom used to play classical records around the house when I was, you know, very young. And then when I got a little older, you know, I started to dig into it, because to me, there is no more music that is more deeply layered and deeply expressive than classical. It just happens to be a passion of mine. So I got really interested in classical composition and orchestration at a young age. And then I studied in college. A lot of people say, you know, that they like to, they just create what they hear. And I completely respect that. For me personally, I love studying, and I love the composition and the theoretical side of music as well, because I feel it just helps me understand things in a way that can give me insight into writing for something like a 30-piece or a 60-piece orchestra. For me, I need to understand what's happening first, what the instruments are capable of, what they're kind of supposed to be doing, what they're good at doing, and then I can sit down and write something. My orchestrations and my the music I write for orchestra, it all starts from a very simple motif, a very simple set of notes, and it builds from there. And that's one of the journeys I love so much about that particular genre of music. And really, most genres of music is that sort of layering, having things work together, you know. And I don't want to get too theoretical, because
right.
I know that's boring, but like, you know, the harmony and, you know, just the way it all sort of comes together like that. For one, it's a lifelong pursuit, especially the orchestra. There is nothing like writing for the orchestra. I think it's one of the most fantastic genres there is. It's a lifelong pursuit.
I love it. Now, I heard you went to Berklee College of Music in Boston, and then you broke out. You left.
I did.
Now,
yeah.
How do you go to Berklee and then be like, I want to go do what I want to do?
Well, so that's exactly right. I went to Berklee for 1 year, and after the first year, I was young, I was highly motivated, and I just was like, I'm ready.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say if you're lucky enough to be in any college, and for me it was a music college, to stay and really, you know, stick it out, I think that's probably the better thing to do. And in fact, if I could do it over, I might have done it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I was so raring to go. Like, you know, you couldn't hold me back. I was let's do this.
right. Well, you actually built a career and saved a ton of money. But like you said, we don't recommend it. Jason and I, we do not recommend you do that.
We do not.
Yeah.
No.
But it worked out for you.
My older son's getting ready to go to college, and I recommend that he stays in college. And I would, you know, because it's such a great thing and such a great opportunity. And Berklee is such a wonderful school. And the year that I had there was amazing, and I did learn so much. And it's an even better school now than it was then.
Right.
It just keeps getting better. So I'm very grateful to Berklee and everything that they were able to teach me in the short time that I was there. But yeah, it's an amazing place.
Yeah.
I still take, oh, and by the way, to speak to that, years ago, I started taking online music composition and theory courses again, because I just think you can never stop learning.
Right.
So I in between jobs, I'm still studying music, and probably will to the final day, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Is there a difference between scoring for film and animation?
I think the short answer to that would be yes, and I think the reason is that I think there's a different approach to scoring almost every project.
Okay.
I think every single project warrants its own unique approach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you could have five animated pieces and all of them could be scored differently depending on what kind of animation they are. And I think that's the same with film. I think you could have five films that would be approached differently with the scoring based on, you know, content and what they're like and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I think I really look at every project as a unique point of departure. And I got to say, it's one of the things that makes it so exciting. But it's also, it takes a discipline to make sure you're not just jumping in and do what you always do. You know, it's important to really look at what the project needs and try and assimilate to that so that you're, you know, bringing the right thing to it.
Man. When you're scoring, how do you know what instrument to start with?
Well, I almost always start with piano.
Okay.
It depends. I mean, sometimes, like if I'm doing something, like I just recently did some music for The Bachelorette on TV, and it was they wanted sort of a country style thing. So I started on acoustic guitar. That felt like,
right,
I think I'm going to get the right vibe.
Uh-huh.
So it really depends, you know, it does depend, but for the most part, I start on piano because the piano it represents every instrument so well that, you know, it's such a great place for me to begin.
All right. So now I'm getting ready to brag on my friend Jason real quick, because that's what we do. One of them, because y'all don't really know him, but here comes his big introduction. We're going to go through some of your compilations of music that we are aware of, like Extra Entertainment News. How did you even get that extra situation going? What was your thoughts?
So there's a really interesting story with that theme. So Extra has been on the air for 33 years.
Right.
I started composing for the show back in about 2005, and I was just writing background music for the segment, or underscore for the segment. They already had the extra vocal. That was written by a composer named Michael Ejizi and his team.
Okay.
And that started with the show. That goes all the way back. I think it goes all the way back to the beginning of the show.
Right.
But what the show decided to start doing was rewriting the music that supported that vocal.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2009, I think, I wrote the music that opened the show that ended with the extra, extra vocal.
Okay.
So it was about rebranding the show musically, but continuing to use that extra, extra vocal because that's very recognizable.
Right, and definitely.
That's become such a big part of the show. So I have, believe it or not, rewritten that theme about 3 or 4 times now.
Oh, wow.
I just rewrote the music again for the new 25-26 season.
Okay.
Every 3 or 4 years, the show likes to refresh the music that's supporting that that vocal.
Nice.
And I've been doing that for the last, like, 12, well, let's see. Yeah, no longer. The last 17 years? No.
That's all
since
right.
2009 is just, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a long time. So that's my part in the theme is I write the music that sort of leads up to that extra vocal.
I love it.
And that's, and that's kind of how that's been going with that show.
All right. Well, we'll bring it up to date. Another one is TMZ Live.
Yes. I started writing for Harvey back when TMZ was just a website.
Oh, okay.
And then, it started as a website. And then he started TMZ on TV. A couple of years after that, he started a show called TMZ Live, which is it's kind of an extension of TMZ on TV. And I wrote the theme music for that show, which ran on that show for, I guess since 2012, so maybe 13 years. I just rewrote that theme for the new 25-26 season.
Man.
So they have new music. They wanted to freshen things up.
Right.
And their music supervisor, Tony Wilgus, over there, I've been working with for many years. And, apropos of what I said earlier about relationships, he came back to me and said they wanted to refresh the music. And so, I wrote some ideas and we got one to work. And that is now the new theme of TMZ Live.
Love it. And yeah. Another one, Jennifer Hudson.
So that, I was brought on to that show. I was brought on to the Ellen DeGeneres show many years ago. And I worked on Ellen's show for her entire 19-year run.
Wow.
I wrote musical segments for her on that show. And I was brought on to that show by a guy named Norman Arnold, who was the creative director at Telepictures at the time. And he got me, or hired me to start writing music for the Ellen show. And also by a guy named David McGuire, who was one of the executive producers on Ellen. When Ellen's show ended, David McGuire moved to the Jennifer Hudson show, and he brought me over to the Jennifer Hudson show. And so I've been writing for her now for 5 years. I think we're in our 5th season.
Wow.
She just got picked up for another year. She's fantastic. They shoot the show on the same stage that they made the Ellen show. So it's really an interesting thing. But Jennifer does such a wonderful job. And, I'm so glad that show is going well. And the people over there are really, really great to work with.
Man, that's all right. Now I want to switch about some of your skills, talents, and abilities. You co-wrote a comedy with Jason Blackman. Now, how did you get into comedy?
So, yeah, kind of through the Ellen DeGeneres show, because Jason Blackman, I met him. He was a writer on the Ellen show, and he ended up winning 3 Emmys for writing comedy for Ellen. And
wow.
He's a really talented comedy writer. And we started writing musical segments for that show together. And that's how we met. And we became friends also.
Uh-huh.
And we just love working together. I love comedy, but I'm not a comedy writer.
He's
a comedy writer. And so one day he came to me and said, listen, I've got an idea for a musical comedy. Do you want to try and write this with me? He explained the concept to me, and I loved it, thought it was very unique, and thought, absolutely. So we sat down and started writing the songs for what ended up becoming, our feature film, which is a slasher rom-com musical. And that is in development now. We're actually getting it made. Yeah.
Okay.
Very exciting. And it's really wild and, you know, genre bending.
Right.
Super fun. And yeah, it's great. So, you know, I don't actually write comedy, but he does. And together, I think we've written some very, very good stuff. And it's very funny. It's very funny.
Well, it's healthy to, you know, expand your horizons and you increase your capacity in different areas, even though we know where your strengths are.
Yes.
Just kind of good to see a different flex or, you know, even examine yourself to say, man, you know, look at what I can do, you know?
Well, and that's it. You know, one of the things that composing for TV and film really teaches you is that you want to try and not repeat yourself. You want to try and continue to grow and continue to do new things. And that's exactly it. Is I love challenging myself and love trying to push myself into new areas. I know that if I'm struggling with something, it's probably because I'm learning something new.
Okay.
And it's an uncomfortable place to be sometimes because it feels like you're not doing a good job or that you're not, that your ability maybe is waning or something like that. But I have found that putting yourself into uncomfortable situations, and for me, musically, really teaches you that it really shows you that you're learning. You're pushing through walls and you're trying to do something different. So I love the challenge of that. And I, like I said, it's not always comfortable, but the rewards are really great.
Man, I love it. Now, you have your own music company, right? JEL Music Group.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Yeah.
What does your company produce, or what are you doing with the production?
So JEL Music Group started back in 2009. My wife and I started it together. She's a wonderfully talented lyricist and singer.
Ow.
And we started doing, you know, a lot of different music for television mostly. And, you know, it got to a point for a while where we were doing a lot of shows and we were hiring other composers to work with us. And, you know, we were just servicing a lot of different TV shows. We were doing a lot of music. And that's really where JEL came from. And then it started to become a little more specific where we would do theme packages for specific shows.
Oh,
or we would
nice.
Do custom, yeah, like custom content like for different television shows, very specific things. And it's kind of been like our home base for a lot of years. You know, if you look at the website, you'll see all, you know, a lot of the shows that we've done. And, you know, it's more of kind, how do I put it? I guess it's just, you know, it's a music company that can do a lot of different things.
Right.
As opposed to like sort of me as a composer, you know, it's a little bit separate. That's why I have a separate website for me as a composer. But, you know, JEL is more of a broad reach on that, on that side of things.
And you have a foundation that supports musicians. Firstly, let me say thank you for launching that foundation. Please share why your foundation is so important.
Absolutely. No, thank you for asking about it. The foundation is called the Gihon Foundation. It's spelled G-I-H-O-N. And the Gihon was started by my grandmother. Her name is Betty Graham. And it was started in the 70s. She invented something called liquid paper. And from the success of liquid paper, she started the foundation. And her goal with the foundation was to support women in the arts. She was a single mom growing up in Texas in the 50s and faced a lot of challenges and was able to bring her invention to, you know, to the world and sell it to Gillette. And
oh, nice.
Ultimately selling it to Gillette in the 70s after she, you know, built a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think her, just the challenges that she faced as a single woman, I think really gave her the compassion to start the Gihon Foundation. And when she passed away, my dad inherited the foundation from her, and he kind of widened it to be supporting the, you know, the performing arts. So it more than just women in the arts, it became, you know, kind of anybody in the arts.
Right.
And then when my dad passed away a couple of years ago, my three siblings and I inherited the foundation. We've been running it now for about 3 or 4 years. And we, you know, it was important to us to widen the mission statement even more, to include, you know, people in the arts, and also not necessarily just in the arts, but people who were trying to kind of rebuild their lives, and people who had faced adversity and were struggling and were recovering, which is why we connected with the two foundations that we've connected with so far. One is called Music Cares, and they support musicians in recovery.
Right.
And the other one is a foundation called Homeboy Industries, who support people who are sort of coming back into society from jails and prisons and trying to reintegrate their lives and, you know, reintegrate with their families, reintegrate into the workforce, and just kind of, you know, try to do that to help better themselves, better their families, and have a, you know, have a better life for themselves. So, you know, these are two important foundations that are doing good work. And so we, as the Gihon, felt that they were, you know, we wanted to be aligned with them and support them. And, you know, it's just important. It's something, it's a part of our family heritage and history. And it was important to our grandma and our dad.
Right.
And so we're honored to be able to sort of carry the torch and continue to do that work. And, you know, it's something we're passionate about. And if we can help somebody, that's what we're grateful to be able to be in a position to do that.
Man. See, this is why you're a key player, because this is what we do. And I want to say congratulations with the Netflix project. And I mean, you're no stranger, no pun intended, to different things.
That's so funny.
To different things.
I was thinking that same thing. Yeah, I was like, that was a good pun she just did.
Yeah. No, I'm always on it. I'm always
that
on
was
it.
Good. Yeah, that was good.
But tell people how they can connect with you and, you know, follow you on social media, and definitely your website.
Well, so yes, I have two websites. One is jelmusicgroup.com, and you can reach out to me through that website.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I have another one, which is jasonnesmithmusic.com, and you can definitely connect with me there.
Okay.
And I have an Instagram account, I have a Facebook account, and a TikTok account.
So I'll just add it on to the post.
Okay, great.
But Jason, thank you so much for stopping by. Like we say, once a key player, always a key player. So as you continue to grow and prosper in your field, feel free to come back and let us know what's going on. And we would love to be one of your media partners.
I'm honored, Nigeria, and I definitely will. I'll follow up with you guys, and you'll be seeing more.
Thank you.
All right. It's a pleasure to meet you and speak with you.
You too, brother. You too.